get down to business.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. We're back from Ohio. This is episode 213. No, you didn't miss 212. Dan, we released 212 today,
well,
right?
You did, yeah. If you didn't pay attention.
Yesterday.
There's just a couple quick interviews.
We got to work out that tech show intro and a new one. It sounds like, I don't know.
Jet. it sounds a little like overloaded there.
Yeah. I'm going to clean that up a little bit or something.
So, everybody made it home in one piece.
And AIDS.
Sounds like Dan picked up a nice sickness on the plane.
Picked up something. I don't know what.
That's because you will make it out with Jeremy.
What was his name? Yeah.
You guys are right. The new Lug Radio website is pretty nice.
So we have to do rock star photos of our own now, huh?
Maybe we should do like a My Little Pony theme.
Oh, My Little Tech Show.
My Little Tech Show. That's it. Yeah. Ohio Linux Fest was awesome.
A good time indeed. I guess we should take it back all the way through. Let's give our listeners a little walkthrough if you didn't get to make it to Ohio this year. We flew in Friday morning, and Dan actually showed up at the airport about, I don't know, half an hour after we did. Not even.
Something like that.
About half an hour.
Yeah. And from there, we got into a cab that smelled like dog piss.
Luckily, I didn't smell that up front.
I didn't smell it in the back either, so I don't know what Pat was talking about.
I think Pat was just smelling the cabbie, that's all.
He was right behind
I'll
the guy.
I'll catch him with something. It was pretty foul.
Well, because he closed up the windows there, and I tried to open up mine, but I couldn't get it open because he had the windows locked.
I couldn't smell anything. I was too busy concentrating on Dan, who was, you know, rubbing my leg like usual, you know.
So we get to the hotel, then Gorkon shows up. We didn't recognize. He looked like a completely different person.
He looks great now, yeah.
He lost a shitload of weight. He wasn't walking around with homeless bags. And then ShopRite showed up.
ShopRite?
And then, ShopRite.
ShopRite, yes, not Brian. The grocery store. Not to be confused with the grocery store where the homeless people get their bags from. ShopRite.
Right. And then Link and Alan went to go take a nap. And then
Dan. I didn't take a nap. I just went and had to relax a little bit. I got up at 2 in the morning to catch that plane.
Me too. I got up at 3. And Gorkon and ShopRite went to go get wings and beer. And that was yummy. We also had lesbians making out in front of us, though.
Did you get pictures of that, by the way?
Lesbians, they didn't look like men, for once.
No, it was scratching. Well,
even more, did you get pictures of that?
No.
Sad people, you.
It was scratch and sniff. No pictures.
And then we went to the pre party, which was the hotel had happy hour from 5 to 7 every night. With a couple of drinks, you know, nothing major, like beer and wine and some chips and stuff. So we went down there, and there was actually quite a few people down there. And we ran into, like, Dave Yates was there, some of the people from Ohio Winter Fest, a few other people.
I know who wasn't there.
Is that Ted?
That one?
Is that Ted who... Hey, Ted.
How's it going?
Pretty good. You're going to have to wait now. You're going to have to wait your turn. We're talking about Ohio... We're talking about Ohio Linux Fest, if you weren't there, so this should be interesting for you.
I didn't even get invited this year.
You were late, and now we get to badmouth you before you come on the show.
Hey, Ted.
I want to listen to that.
Hey, Ted, do you have a way to turn up your volume or something?
Is that better?
That's a whole lot better. Okay.
Much better, right. Yeah.
Actually, we should shut up and let Ted talk, because he's the guest of honor.
Well, let's just go through, you know, what we saw.
No, I want to hear about Ohio Linux Fest. You guys,
yeah,
he
didn't go, so he didn't. So when we went to pre-party.
Wait. What do you mean? You don't have to be invited to go to Ohio Linux Fest.
Yeah, but Zonker should have really, you know, at least just said hello or something. Hey, come on out.
I think he thought you died.
I think a lot of people thought that. But go on,
dude,
tell about the show.
There were people running around on the floor wearing t-shirts that says, "Where is Ted?"
That's true, I saw a few of those.
Did they have axes in their hands?
No, man, they had little "I love Ted" signs. And
had cutlery.
So if you remember last year, Ted, we had our little get-together at Barley's. Well,
yeah.
They loved it so much that they made the official pre-party at Barley's. And they actually paid for booze too.
Did they really?
Oh yeah.
And it gets better. They gave me and Dan the tickets to hand out to everybody for free drinks.
They even let you guys come? Wow.
Yeah.
We were popular.
I mean, what surprised me was towards the end of the night, it was even getting hard to get rid of those tickets.
They went through them pretty quick. I'd say about 3 hours.
How was the turnout this year?
It was awesome.
For the Barleash thing? For the pre-show?
No, for the entire show.
Oh, we don't care about the entire show. We just care about the pre-show.
That's as far as you made it for the show, huh?
Yeah, that's it. The Barleash was even bigger turnout this year than it was last year. And
I said it was about 200 people in the bar.
And the show, the actual Ohio Linux Fest, had a bigger turnout last year, but there was just way too many people who didn't register.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they couldn't get an accurate count of how many people showed up, but, man, you could just tell, compared to last year, God, there was a heck of a lot more people running around this year.
My guess would be like 1,500 to 2,000 people, probably.
I'd say closer to 2,000, my guess.
Not bad.
I mean, when we had our book drawing, we had a shitload of people out there. In fact, I'm going to put the picture, the link in the RC room. You could just see the crowd that's there. It's pretty huge, man. Look at this crowd.
Oh, yeah, we had to have like 300 people standing.
At least 300 people at the drawing.
Heads as far back as I could see, all the way back to the freaking escalators, you know, around the corner.
Wow. See, the reason I said I needed an invite to go is I'm too cheap to pay for my own airline ticket, so the speaking gigs are how I get places.
Oh, so you want them to invite you to come speak, not just to show up.
You guys can, like, share costs, because the four of you pile into a very large car filled with all kinds of gas.
We all flew in this year, actually.
The three of us piled into a very small plane.
Really?
Yeah, with something like a Pringles can with 50 people in it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, my plane was pretty packed, too, but... It was a short flight.
Who was it that belched into the microphone just before I dialed in?
That sounds like a link.
I don't recall, really.
It must have been.
I've got to say, having been a podcaster and having had a show and everything, I always look to you guys to help me look professional. And little gestures like that just, like, put it right over the edge, I managed to look okay.
We're glad we can help.
Absolutely, thanks.
Well, the actual show was awesome. Had a lot of good guest speakers there.
Did it?
Mad Dog came back, and there was a whole bunch of new ones.
Very cool.
Max Spivak.
Yeah, very good. Max Spivak did the first talk in the morning.
Did Joe Bourne do one?
Yeah, I got his email about going there and everything.
Yeah, Joe Bourne was there. He did a talk.
Are they're supposed to be making the speeches. The presentations, they're supposed to have those recorded and release those, aren't they?
That's what they said originally. I don't know if it's going to happen.
But I hope so. I do hope so. And there was a heck of a lot of people. It was a wonderful time. And I really enjoyed the closing keynote speech.
Yeah, that was actually very good. That was Bradley Kuhn, who actually I just got an email back from him. He said to come on the show.
That's going to be awesome. And that's the only... There was so much going on. I mean, I said, like, from the moment I got off the plane, it was just nonstop. There was just so much going on until I got back on the plane and went home. It was just constant going and going and going. Even the after-show party was really, really good. And, of course, there was the trip out there to the Happy Greek, which a fantastic Greek restaurant... Ted, were you with us when we went to the Happy Greek last year?
We went to a restaurant last year, but at that point I was a few beers in, and I can't really remember it that well.
It was the,
I
think he was the BD Mongolian Grill.
Yeah, he went to the Mongolian with us.
Mongolian, that's right.
Yeah, the night after we went to this Greek place was really good, too.
Yeah, I think you guys had your fill of me by that point.
Yeah.
I mean, like, everybody was there. We had Jeremy Garcia, we had Dave Yates, we had Chess Griffin, we had Aaron Newcomb. We had Elon from Scale, Don Paris.
Oh, that's awesome that Elon made it out there. That's great.
Yeah.
He's a really good guy.
He is.
Yeah, the guys from the Ontario Linux Fest showed up.
Yeah, the guys from the Ontario Linux Fest.
No kidding.
And so many listeners showed up. It was really, really good.
That's fantastic. You know, it's kind of a cool thing about these regional Linux conferences. I mean, they're the only really legitimate thing going on as far as like conferences go. The one up in Bellingham, the Linux Fest Northwest, the Ohio Linux Fest, Gale, all these kind of things that are going on are the things where, you know, they're managing to control the vendors, and that's very cool. And it ends up with a show that's a lot more about community and things. You just find that.
There were vendors there. The vendors are actually pretty low-key compared to, like, you know, Linux World Expo.
Well, that's what I'm comparing it to, you know. It's when it's a community of sponsored event like that, unlike IDG, who runs Linux World, you know, and it's just their for-profit venture. People know that they're coming for something that's legitimate, and the vendors seem to tune into that. That's my impression, anyway.
Another fantastic... There's actually somebody from Novell there. Guy did a presentation on MIT-TV.
Was it a pretty tall, lanky guy with a little beard?
Yes, I think
Jeff.
So.
Yeah, it's Jeff Price. That dude.
I saw a few minutes of it. He actually looked like looked like a very good presentation.
Yeah, he's a bud of mine. Jeff is really good peeps, and he's just the uber geek as far as myth goes. He just is way into it.
No, I think he was there with his kids. He had his daughter running around.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Did you catch the Myth TV presentation, Pat?
I saw about 5 minutes of it, and from what I saw of it, it looked really good.
Did he have Myth TV installed on SUSE?
I have no idea. I would assume so, since he's a Novell guy.
Pat's the only one that actually caught any presentations, I think, because he just left us while we all manned booth, and he just walked off and did his own thing like a bastard.
I saw about 10 minutes of maybe 3 different presentations.
That's 10 minutes more than I saw, you prick.
I saw the Python presentation, which was like this...
That would have been 30 minutes more than I saw.
Yeah, but you hadn't gotten out of bed yet, had you?
Who, me? I was there on time.
Oh, I was there. I was there to
this year. See, the thing is, Jeremy and I both were in the same hotel, so... I mean...
So Dan didn't
all he had to do was go up a floor.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say up a floor, just up and down a couple inches, that's all.
Yeah.
How's old Jeremy doing anyway?
Oh, he's doing really well. He's consulting now, and he's doing great. He's a happy guy.
He said that that's one of the big things that's kind of come out of his LQ.org stuff, is that people kind of have started to come to him more and more, and that was picking up. That was when I talked to him at Scale last year. So,
what is Scale? Scale's in March, I think, February, March, or something like that.
Had it in, oh man, now I got to put that together. I think it's end of January or early February. It's early February. It's like middle, like 12th of February or something like that.
Gonna have to make that at some point.
It's a pretty good show. Elon and those guys, they've pulled off something pretty incredible in that show. And it's covering well as far as like vendors are kicking in money and things like that. So it's done very nicely.
Yeah, it's February 8th through the 10th this year, 2008.
Good one to make.
Hey, how come your volume went down again there, Ted?
Is that better?
That's a lot better.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Don't have that again, man.
Mouth every time I talk now.
That's it. Put your mouth on the phone.
I think I need a new headset is what it comes down to.
It sounds like
you're
like...
The phone that you used to have at Novell was much louder.
Yeah, well, you know, I used to have a full-on recording studio, and that was a lot cooler because I could adjust all the volumes and everything, so you guys could tell me something like that, and I would be able to just turn it up. Here, I'm going to try something. Is that any better?
A little bit, yeah.
I don't know what you did, but you killed somebody.
Oh, did I?
They sound really
try
good.
Try that again, then. Yeah. Let's do that a couple more times.
Who just dropped up?
And came back on it. What'd you know? I hit the wrong freaking button.
Good job. Okay. That's professionalism right there.
It is right there.
Pressing
the wrong button and, you know, burping and stuff. You'd think it was my fucking show.
That's it. and Link, you're kind of soft, too.
Hey, let's not go there.
There we go. That's it. Stiffen up a little bit there.
So, Ted, man, you're still in Utah, Provo?
I am still in Utah. I actually live up in Park City, so I can't live down in Provo. Provo's pretty much not the place I want to live.
Very cheesy, huh?
How far is that from you?
That's from about an hour from me. So it was an hour drive when I was working down there at Novell, and now about 45 minutes away from, because I'm working just north of there in Orem.
So tell us about the new job, man. What the heck are you doing over there?
Well, the new job is at a company called Bungie Labs, and we're working at creating a platform for developing web apps called Bungie Connect. And the basic goal that we're shooting for, now that I've said it's for developing web apps, is we're trying to make something where people can actually develop on this platform for free. And there's not really an IDE you install on a local system or anything. It's all totally in the browser. So it works on Firefox, it works in Explorer, and it works in also Safari in the WebKit version that's coming up here. So that you can just sign up, get an account, start developing on the platform that we have. And the basic idea that we're going for is we're doing software development and deployment as a service, so you can develop on our platform and then actually deploy and host on the platform that we provide. And what that means is, essentially, if you don't have a data center but you've got a great idea for an app, this is going to be one of those things where you can actually develop your app rather quickly, get full rich interactivity in the browser, like all the Ajax kind of things. We have a whole toolkit for all the different types of controls that you're going to want for making really beautiful apps, with full application logic, ability to bring in various SOAP services and REST-based services. And then if you don't have the money to host it yourself, you don't have the ability to do that, this is going to be a good platform for people like that, because you just put it on our stuff. And the more your app gets used, we charge for that. But if your app doesn't take off, you're not out anything but your time in developing the app. So that's the basics of what we do, and that's with Bungie Connect. We're in an early access beta phase right now, so we've pretty much been allowing a limited number of people in throughout the summer, and testing our system strength, scalability features, and expanding all those throughout the whole summer. And we're ramping up toward, hopefully, open beta coming up, which will be coming up sometime, if everything goes well, somewhere right around the November-December time frame.
Cool. Now, what is this stuff mainly built on? Is it using the, like, JavaScript, PHP, Ruby on Rails? What's it use, or is it something?
Well, it's really actually all written in C++ on the back end, on our servers, and these are actually Linux servers. That in a data center grid type situation, we actually have three different data centers: one in London, one in Denver, and one in, holy smokes, where to go, New York City. And we also have some spillover into, we actually have Seattle, a little company called, what's the name, Amazon or something like that, with a data center that we can spill over into. And that whole system is all Zen hosted, ZXEN, not the ZEN of my former company, but XEN hosted virtual machines, so we just purpose those out as we need to. So that's really like the scalability technology that we use underneath, and we just spin up more and more machines as load capacity goes up and needs to. Most of the web itself is just provided in C-based interfaces. It drops down a client onto any, I shouldn't even call it really a client, it's more like a library into your browser. It's an AJAX library that drops down about 400K worth, and that brings you the whole IDE experience with drag and drop and everything else, and allows you to make your apps that use that same library. So we actually wrote the app for developing more apps inside of our own, you know, with our own stuff. And so everything, every interaction you get through our IDE is the same kind of interaction that you can provide out there to the people who are going to use the apps that you make through this IDE. So that's just a little bit of the technology that's going on there. We try to, one of the things that we try to do is we eliminate what we call yak shaving. Some might be familiar. You guys heard of the term yak shaving before?
Well, talk to Dan. He's the web developer.
Well, yak shaving is really not a web development thing so much. the basic concept of...
Dan's into yaks, so...
Again, I know that, but I don't know if he's ever... Do you like your yaks shaved, Dan?
Yak shaving is
not like
the
hairy.
Is that kind of like the hoagie guy story?
No.
He's
the
back
idea
in the
of yak
shower
shaving is
yak.
Pretty much if you ever had to deal with one of those processes where you got to do like 20 million things just to get to the actual part that you were wanting to do, you know, like in the world of web apps, you usually have to deal with, okay, I got to bring up a web server, and then I've got to bring up usually some kind of Java stack on it, and I've got to make sure I do all this security, and I've got to then put AJAX stuff on there so that I can do JavaScript and AJAX and things like that. And all this building up that people have to do and all the programming just to enable AJAX controls and things like that, that's all in the way usually of deploying web apps. That whole process, that's what you call yak shaving, because yaks apparently have very thick fur. And so one of the terms, you guys can actually Google this one because it's actually, there's a lot of good net stories about yak shaving. Apparently to burrow down to the actual yak skin and actually get the yak fully shaved, you have to go through like multiple layers of thick hair or whatever. So it's just kind of the term that we use around Bungie. We try to eliminate all the yak shaving and let you get straight to making your application without having to do all the rest of the stuff of creating AJAX controls or getting the toolkit to actually work on your system and things. We get you straight to making your app. How was that for a long tangent?
Do you have some pretty videos that we can watch?
I'm still trying to
actually,
figure out. I'm trying to figure out how they came up with.
Ted, get your asses to the RC and post them.
The disturbing thing is that somebody has actually had to experience that or something in order for that to, you know.
So I started doing a whole bunch of searching when I first heard the term yak shaving, because I had to know more about this term, because it just made me laugh, the idea of shaving one of these, you know, a yak is a large, bovine, furry creature from the Himalayas. And when I looked through the web all about yak shaving, I found that there was actually a sport that somebody was trying to
spin up in, I guess it was in Nepal, called yak skiing, where apparently you stand at the bottom of a hill and there's a yak at the top of the hill. You hold a rope tied to the yak. There's a tree on the hill that the yak's on one side of, and the rope goes around it like a pulley. And there's a point where you hold up a bucket of nuts, and at the point that you shake it, you have to hold on very tight and be a very good skier to be able to steer away from the yak that's running at the back the bucket of nuts that you just dropped because the yak took off running for it.
And then what happens?
Well, you either get run down by the yak or you get to the top of the hill, and it's I guess a new thrill sport that they're doing in Nepal.
Ah.
So
sounds
look up
like
yak
fun.
Skiing while you're looking up yak shaving.
Now, where did the bucket of nuts come from? The last four or five guys who failed their attempt up the hill, or what?
You know, I haven't researched it enough to tell you more than that, but there is at least one article out there. I think it's like a BBC online article, so you know it's got to be trustworthy. I think I started to ask some other question before the yak shaving. I think.
I just want to see a pretty video.
Oh, yeah, that's right. All right, Pat. So for videos, if you want to see a couple, like we just put up a reference app, and we don't have really huge apps up yet, but there's a couple different reference apps up. If you go to bungeeconnect.wordpress.com, we're hosting our blog on WordPress, you can check out a couple different videos there. That's also the place to find my new podcast. But you can go to bungeeconnect.wordpress.com, and there's a couple different posts. One of them is about putting design into your web applications, and it's just a quick little like mashup of Google Maps and Flickr Maps. Google Maps and Flickr Photos. If you do a couple different searches that they say on the blog post, once you bring the app up, you'll get to see a few different like things of the interactions between kind of apps we can make with drag and drop and stuff like that. And then I think we have another one up on the same blog called Extending Salesforce Functionality with the Apex API or something. There are those free software people that don't like the Apex API because it is kind of a lock-in strategy that Salesforce is going for. But we actually did some functionality extensions to that for a customer in San Francisco.
Well, yeah. as long as you're not bricking the user's computer, I think you'll be okay.
Yeah, let's hope not. So you can check those out anyway. That's where to go find that. And we're adding more videos over the next week, I think. And I mentioned also that I started a new podcast since my exit from Novell and my leaving Novell Open Audio. You can check out my new podcast called The Bungee Line. You'll find links to it on that same place.
Speaking of Novell Open Audio, it's still pretty damn good.
Well, you know, the guy that's... one of the guys who's involved in it is my buddy Aaron, who's still there at Novell, and he's been working in virtualization and stuff like that. And I mean, the dude's sharp, and a lot of what Novell Open Audio wasn't me. It was the combination of he and I working together, and I didn't really have a whole lot of fear about Novell Open Audio going down the tubes completely after I left, because I knew it was in good hands with my buddy Aaron.
So yeah, perhaps they're working on virtual TED.
So in other words, what you're saying, Pat, is Ted didn't bring anything to the table that couldn't have been replicated by anybody else, right?
Well, the one thing I noticed...
That's nice.
...the presentation was for, man. It's virtual Ted doing the podcast.
Since Ted left, they don't seem to be putting out as many episodes as they used to.
Well, that's because they had a dedicated person to it back then. And Aaron ends up traveling all the time, talking about different stuff, doing different customer calls, and also doing a lot of different presentations publicly and things, and doing internal trainings. He's a pretty busy guy. And so once I was out, it meant that the weekly schedule that we had became more like a every week and a half to 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question about your new podcast. It's called it's Bungee Connect, correct?
Bungee Connect's the platform that we offer. The Bungee Line is just our general podcast.
Okay, the Bungee Line. Would you consider it a open source free software podcast, or is it going to encompass more than just the open source of the FOSS environment?
It's going to encompass a lot more. You know, open source is going to always be something near and dear to my heart, so you're going to hear me talk about it and bring that angle. My co-host on it, though, is my friend Alex Barnett. And Alex is actually formerly of Microsoft. He was working in Microsoft Data Programmability Group, and he was a fairly prominent blogger for them. He's very much into the web APIs and things, and that's a big area of, interest to both of us since we're at Bungie Labs. So he's going to focus on a lot of that kind of stuff. I'm going to focus on web APIs and also open APIs, and then a little bit of the open source thing, but it's not going to be nearly as concentrated on that. But to give an example of how some of that kind of stuff is brought in, take, for example, this most recent interview that we did, since there are two episodes online now, I can talk about the most recent one. We grabbed Jeremy Zawadny from Yahoo, and he works in Yahoo's developer network, YDN, and he's actually talking to us about the Zimbra acquisition that was announced and some other things. He talks about some of the things about openness at Yahoo and things and what Yahoo's attitude is toward that. And I still try to bring that angle in as much as I can, but I'm going much more as a generalist in web APIs these days.
Will you be offering an AUG feed?
You know, I've considered doing that. I haven't done it yet, just because when I did develop an audio, I had a lot of people complain because we had planned to do an AUG feed, and we first released MP3, and then we're...
Oh, commie!
Exactly. And so we got shooed pretty well for not having AUG out there. But that was a podcast that was so focused on open source that there were the people that were like, I won't use MP3 because it's a proprietary format. And I've had a hard time convincing some of my coworkers that there are those mindsets out there that are offended by the idea of MP3 and its general existence and the fact that it's encumbered by patents and things. And the response usually is, well, it's free for the decode, you know. So I'll probably get an AUG feed going eventually. And in fact,
don't forget about iTunes, Ted. You gotta keep in mind iTunes people.
All Ted's friends are saying, you know what? Ted just likes to cater to those Linux freaks.
That's exactly what I get. But you know what? The fun thing is, most of the guys that work at Bungie are Linux freaks as well. There's only about, there's probably about 50% of the guys. I shouldn't say most. There's probably about 50% that are either Linux users or pretty avid Linux heads. And the dominant, our data centers are running Debian, and the most of the guys are using Ubuntu, or there are a couple Novell renegades at the company, so there's a couple guys who are using OpenSUSE or SLED.
You're going to beat that out of them, right?
Yeah, you know, actually, I got to say, I'm actually using a dual boot Mac, and I'm using SLED on my Mac still. I haven't got managed. I even went to the Ubuntu guys at a conference. What conference was it? It was the Bellingham Linux conference, Linux Fest Northwest. I went to the Ubuntu guys there, and I showed them. I cannot get past the boot. And this is right after Spicekit had come out, and they were trying to get it past the boot up, and it would just freeze every time. I had no problem.
Man. So you hear that, Ubuntu guys? It sounds like a challenge.
exactly. So, you know, I actually was hoping for the blog post where I could just write a blog post that says Reverend Ted switches to Ubuntu, but I haven't been able to switch to it yet.
Talk to Alan. No, wait a second. He doesn't run Linux on his Apple machine.
No, I don't.
You guys know what the headlines...
I do in parallels, but...
The headlines of Alexa are going to be like tomorrow, right? Like Ted says he hates Ubuntu. Ubuntu sucks. He can't get it on his MacBook. That kind of thing.
You know, you're so right about that, though. It's one of the funniest things about, you know, it's just the kind of like major suspicion out there. People will take it that just because I'm using an operating system that I know, that I'm still like a diehard Novell person or whatever. And you know, at a certain point, you just got to go yawn and move on.
That's our entertainment, though. You know.
But you got a lot of friends at Novell. I see your LinkedIn profile, and you got a lot of people from Novell.
Yeah, I'm getting more LinkedIn profile or LinkedIn friends that way right now too. There's been a flood of LinkedIn requests coming to me this week.
Now, are there a lot of people leaving Novell? Is there like some mass exodus going on over there?
Well, the rumors out there, if you look at like the Boycott Novell site, which I just was on this morning because one of the guys who's an author there had linked over to my blog. So I looked at it again, and I guess there's a rumor going on that there's a big layoff coming through Novell. And so that correlates pretty well with the fact that I'm getting all these LinkedIn requests as of this week when the rumor hit. But I don't know. I'm not there, and I'm not connected in to the rumor mill on the company, nor do I want to be. So I'm not.
You know what the real question is, Ted? The real thing that everybody has, that I've talked to today that knew you were coming on the show, everybody wanted to know. They wanted to know what the skinny is on Novell and what can you tell us about Novell now that you're not working for them.
Okay, and tell me a little bit more about which skinny they want. I mean, there's all kinds of things that I could say that are boring about the company.
Well, what you
and
got?
I still
what's,
am held under a confidentiality
stuff?
Agreement.
Why'd they do it?
Yeah.
Why'd
they
do the agreement?
Stuff?
Why'd they do it all and kill the community?
Well, I think the easiest way to look at the why they did it is it was a business deal in the eyes of businessmen who run the company. And, you know, I wasn't pulled into the process on the signing or anything. I don't know anything about how the actual deal went down. I was one of the people who, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Utah time, or 3 o'clock, or 3 o'clock Pacific time when they were meeting in the hotel in San Francisco. I was one of the guys with my jaw on the floor, going, "What?" Not really expecting to hear what I had heard. So I was out of the loop on it, just like many other people were, and I was one of the people who was, you know, trying to make sense of it for a while, and eventually started looking elsewhere.
Well, it was a long while, though. It seemed like they, you know, they made the announcement, and then it was nothing for like a month. And then you had your boss on there on your show.
And then they tried to take over the world.
Well, was that my boss? Oh, that was Ron Hovsepian we had on there. We had him on just like about a week and a half after, I think, or something like that. I don't think the guys up there at the top of the company, I don't think they had any idea that they were doing something that would be seen as evil. And that's just the impression from, you know, conversations and from hearing them speak publicly and still seeing how their marketing tries to spin the deal,
because
I still just kind of look at it and go, they just do not understand what the concern of the community is. I haven't heard them articulate it yet. You know, I'd love to hear them repeat it back. And I was one of the things I was advocating for the longest time. If we can't say clearly, you know, this is while I was there, we can't say clearly why people are upset with this, then we look clueless. We can't address the actual concerns. And I never got anywhere with that.
Crickets.
Yeah, pretty much. So when, you know, at the time that I announced that I was leaving, which was shortly after Novell's BrainShare conference, which I got, you know, was one of my goals of ever going to Novell was to present at that conference, you know, so it was like a last hurrah. Shortly after that, when I announced that I was leaving and said that it was in part due to the deal, I didn't have an exit interview with anybody but my immediate boss.
They didn't want to talk to you.
No. I have no idea whether they want to. Maybe they were busy. I don't know. So, you know, it was just one of those things where...
Did that frost you?
I kind of just went on my own way and realized, you know, kind of tried to just explain it to myself that, hey, things have changed. What I had said about the company, the way I advocated the company, was no longer the way that the company was. And it more felt just like it wasn't because of massive objections with the deal that I had, really, that I left. I did think that it was stupid and kind of ham-handed, the way it, the whole thing was handled, right, from the deal and then the public response that they had, or lack of, immediately afterward. But the main thing was, I felt like the way I had advocated the company was no longer true, and to stay any longer would be my integrity. So,
and that's why you left?
It would make you look like an idiot.
Well, it would, worse than just looking like an idiot, because trust me, Pat, I look like an idiot all the time. I'm really skilled at that, and I've gotten used to it, and I'm comfortable with it. But looking like somebody who was a shill, you know, somebody who was just disingenuously espousing one thing about the company when the company was going in a different direction than what I was saying about it. And that's something that, you know, it was more just it didn't line up with what I had been saying about the company. And so it just didn't feel comfortable saying.
How many years were you there, Ted?
9.5.
It's a long time.
Wow.
In fact, September 27th would have been 10 years for me. So just it would have been 10 years just as of last week.
A long time to give to a company.
Yeah, it was, you know, and I can't complain about it a bit, and I can't really say that Novell was a bad company in any way for the time that I was there up until the very end, where it just didn't align with what I was saying anymore. I had a great run at Novell, and it was a great company to work for. I worked with fantastic people, many of whom are still at Novell, and, you know, so I try not to wish the company ill will, because I have friends that work there. I have friends who are incredibly talented and bright people that I've known for many years, and then other friends who are newer people that I've gotten to work with. You know, working with people such as Nat Friedman, dude is just brilliant, and I love to talk to him. I love to interact with him. I love to, you know, be in the presence of somebody who's got a thinking process like his. And there are a lot of people that disparage him, but he's aces with me. He's just a really brilliant guy. So I don't like to harp on the company too much, because I think it ends up being too much about it. It can get convoluted between the people, the engineers who actually work for Novell and make a living there, versus the management who, you know, maybe are doing different things than a lot of people in the open source community agree with.
Now, what was it difficult then to continue working on the Novell Open audio podcast and not be able to express your concerns or anything like that? And or were you forbidden from speaking out against that deal? Because it almost sounds like what you said on the Open podcast and what you're saying now are two different things regarding the deal and your opinion of it.
Well, there's always a, you know, when you're paid by somebody. I guess it was it Sinclair Lewis that said it's hard to get a man to understand something that he's paid not to understand. And so, I don't know if you've heard that quote, but I hope it bears some relevance.
I have now.
I think there's some of that for a lot of people who are in management at Novell that might be going on, but there's also that for there's also a little bit of that for me, but there's also, you know, when you're getting a paycheck from a company, no matter how onerous that company might have been on things or how much you might disagree with them, they're paying you for something. And that's where it kind of became more and more of like a cognitive dissonance for me over the months that followed the announcement of the agreement, where it was just okay, how do I continue to keep the show going? How do I continue to keep the kind of same spirit in the show that we had before? And you'll notice if you look at what we covered from the time that the announcement was made forward, much of it was about non-Linux topics. You would hear us talk about Open Enterprise Server, which was a lot of stuff about classic NetWare as well, and technologies there, and appeals to a different audience than a lot of the free software community. You find that I've talked a lot about Novell's Identity Manager product, ZenWorks, and some other things, and a lot less about Linux. And that's I look back at it and I go, wow, that's really a marked difference in what we were covering. If you look all the way up to the agreement, we had just bombarded people with stuff about the SUSE Linux Enterprise 10 release. So we changed our tone quite a bit after the agreement.
Now, do you think, did you change your tone after the agreement? Was that a conscious choice on part of the show, or were you kind of directed down that avenue?
I never really had a whole lot of editorial oversight on the show. Most of the stuff that we covered was pretty much me just sort of looking at things and going, hey, we should cover this and we should cover that. And Aaron also doing the same thing, saying, hey, you know what? This guy's in town. We should grab him and do a show. And, you know, pretty soon some of our guys who were contributors into the show, like Dave Mayer, Randy Goddard, Caitlin Yon, all these people were also bringing people in periodically. Caitlin actually got us our interview, Greg Crow Hartman, when he came on and talked about the drivers and Linux drivers initiative and things like that. So it was never really said to me what I had to cover on the show. There was definitely some feeling on my part that talking a whole lot about the agreement before I understood it well enough was not something I wanted to get into on the show, because I was still in the process of assembling what I thought of the agreement and really what the impact would be. So, yeah, I mean, there's that kind of influence. It doesn't have to necessarily be a you may not do this or you may do that, you know, but when you are working for a company, there come points where you sort of look at it and go, maybe I'll just stay away from that one.
Okay, so then, kind of, I guess the big bone of contention with the agreement was regarding the patents. And I didn't hear a lot of contention regarding the sharing of technology with one another and improving virtualization and interoperability. So, I mean, are you of that opinion, too, that, you know, 2 out of 3 wasn't bad?
You know, I talked quite a bit to, and looked a lot to a buddy of mine for guidance, Jeremy Allison of the Samba Project, who exited Novell shortly after the agreement. And, you know, I asked him about, you know, what are his thoughts on it and things. And he said, you know, from his team's standpoint, from the Samba team's standpoint, from his own personal standpoint, you know, this deal wouldn't be such a bad thing. It's this one component that was such a difficult part of it. And I looked at it in, you know, through his eyes in a lot of ways, because Jeremy's, I don't know if you guys have had a chance ever to talk to Jeremy or anything, but Jeremy's just a wonderful human being.
Yeah, we spoke to him a few times.
Hilarious guy, too. And his guidance on that really helped me kind of look at it in a lot more clear light on things. And as I took in what he had said, and I took in what other people who defended the agreement outright, some people who were questioning it but thought it wasn't so bad, and various other things, I started to look at it and say, you know what? There are going to be 3 types of people. There are going to be people who just say, hey, it's just business, and they don't care. There are going to be people who say it's the patent part of it is the bad part, and the rest of it probably would have been noble if it weren't for that. And then there are the people who are going to say that it's going to be a bad deal no matter what, because it's got the Microsoft name on it. And I dismissed that last group, and I probably fall into the second group a lot more.
So then another thing that has sort of come down the pike, particularly focused around Novell and a lot of its higher profile employees, is the whole Mono project and Moonlight. And there's a significant vocal community that looks towards Mono and its derivatives as being a wolf in sheep's clothing, that we're opening ourselves up to patent infringement issues down the line between Microsoft and Linux and the Mono project. What are your feelings on that?
You know, on as far as mono goes, I think mono's got a couple issues for me. The performance issues that I still have with mono written code and things like that, like Banshee or Beagle, they've gotten way better, but there's still some performance slog to it, I guess, is the best way to put it. Those are the kind of issues I have. They're more technology issues with mono, and I know that Miguel and his team have been on that and working on it and refining it and things like that to try to, you know, make the platform better and better. I don't see it as necessarily a wholly bad thing. You would have to throw the same thing at Samba. Samba's argument all along has been it's the reality of the computer world that Windows file sharing is the way things go. That's, if you can't integrate with that, you're going to be isolated from a huge, huge number of machines out there, because most desktop machines, by a huge majority, and a large number of server machines as well, by a large percentage, double digits, are Windows machines. And so you have to do file sharing with them. As long as Microsoft has the market position it does, you can't just stick your head in the sand and say, this stuff doesn't exist, and supporting it is going, you know, is just capitulating to them. They own a lot of market, and they have a strong monopoly, or have had one. I don't know if that's lasting, if you look at how many Apple machines are getting out there now and the ongoing progress of Linux. But there has to be a certain amount of integration there. So I don't look at these things as bad that way. Then the next one, as part of your question, is it, are we opening ourselves up to potential patent infringements and things? And it's an interesting thing. I don't think that Microsoft really wants to go after people in that area, and I don't think they probably are looking at, they probably look at mono more as the nefarious way that they get their dominant world agenda going than a way to exercise patents. I mean, you can't do one and the other at the same time. To wit, if you look today, there's been some announcements where one of the big .NET developers actually announced how they're opening up more and more libraries of the .NET framework. And when I say opening up, I'm using that. I'm not saying freeing. I'm saying opening up. They're putting the source code so that people can look at the source code. It's not free software by any means. And it's I don't want people to get the idea that I'm misconstruing what freedom is versus opening it up. This is more like lifting the skirt and saying you can look but you can't touch. But still, they're doing that, and I think that's going to allow they're allowing people to look at the source code. And what that's going to do for teams like Miguel's team, I would predict, I don't know this inside and out, but it's going to allow people to look at the source code. It's going to allow them to, if they're mono developers, say, hey, this looks like an area where we could refine our code. And this looks like an area where maybe we've overlapped their code and we need to re-architect or re-implement, say, in order to keep from being in patent territory.
So I
don't know. I don't think that it's Microsoft's agenda in that area. I won't say at all, but I don't think it's in that area that they want to exercise, you know, their boogeyman of patent suits.
All right, fair enough.
Does that make sense?
No, it does. It does. It makes a lot of sense. You know, and one of the things that I've been learning more and more, and is this a whole, it's such a confusing, uncertain, landmine-riddled field out there. When you talk about, you know, you're saying, well, they're opening up the code. Well, you can look at the code, but you can't copy it, so to speak. But also, you have to be careful whether or not what the code does is under somebody's IP, and if you kind of emulate or work around and build into your code some of the same type of procedure to be in somewhat compatible with it, you could be infringing on a person's intellectual property. You know, and the same thing comes all the way back with looking at, you know, .NET being, quote, an open standard or a published standard. And just because it's open doesn't necessarily mean it's not patent encumbered.
Just because it's a standard doesn't mean it's open.
True.
That, I mean, look, MP3 is a very good example of that. Very much not open.
But aren't they? But, don't they say that .NET is an open standard?
I don't know if Microsoft says that or not. That's just not an area that I know about.
Because I know they say MPEG... we're going to get a lot of hate mail now for this. They say MPEG-4 is an open standard, but it's not. It's patent encumbered.
Well, it's definitely a standard. I think you can say that. But, yeah, the whether it's open or not, I don't think it is. I think it's pretty encumbered.
But it's billed as being... like Apple, on their website, if you look at their website and they talk about their QuickTime technology, and they say QuickTime 8, I think it is, uses the open MPEG 4 standard.
Right, so I think that's what's going on in the industry right now, though, is open is like this word that you just got to glob onto, and marketers don't necessarily know what open is, nor would they be able to even understand anywhere close, in a lot of cases, what the difference between free and open is. You know, and this is one of the reasons why, if you get into the Free Software Foundation's doxology and things, you find that they're so against the term open source, because open source does not mean the same thing as free. Free definitely means that the source is open, but the reverse is not true. And Microsoft opening up their code in within C Sharp is definitely a great way to look at it, at that, and see an example of that. You cannot freely copy and distribute and modify and distribute their code. They're opening it up so you can actually see the inner workings, so you can better understand how to develop to it when you're that deep level of a developer. They're far from free, though. They're far from really being open source by the OSI definition.
Right. True. And that becomes a problem.
But to close out on the Mono subject, one of the things that I see happen really often is Miguel gets maligned, Miguel de Acasa gets maligned for, being a tool of Microsoft's Borg machine or whatever, because he's bringing that stuff onto Linux. And you'll find that there are the people that, you know, will never, ever add Mono to their distribution. And, you know, there are still distros that hold out firmly on that. There are others that look at it and say, well, look at the benefits and things. I don't think Miguel has really any agenda on that other than one that is similar to what the guys on Samba say, which is it's the reality of the industry that these guys dominate, and we surrender a lot of market space to them by making it so that our platform is crippled without this stuff. So we need this stuff. And, you know, here's the guy that started a free desktop, GNOME desktop, doing this. So I don't think it's a fair thing to say that here's this guy who's, you know, single-handedly trying to bring down the entire industry of free software.
Fair enough.
Wrong. I mean, there's a lot of dissenting opinion.
Fair enough. There we have it, the final answer from Ted Hager. And that should be enough for everybody else out there.
Ted, right? what I want to know is that picture of you and Chris DeBono that you posted on your blog. Where did you meet him?
So, you know, people might not know about that one. And I think if you haven't linked to that one, I request you guys link to that now that it's out there. So... I am very big into the free thinking rationalist movement that's going on. I'm one who follows a lot of really cool podcasts, or at least I think they're very cool, like Point of Inquiry and what's the other ones? Skepticality was one of the first ones out there that actually got featured by Apple on stage when podcasting was just suddenly becoming, I guess, known in the eyes of big companies like Apple. So I'm into that kind of stuff. Every summer, or every winter for a while there, but now coming up in June next year, I go to what's called the Amazing Meeting, and that's the James Randi Educational Foundation's meeting in Las Vegas. James Randi is a former magician who now debunks psychics and things like that. And they have a great time with all kinds of world-class magicians. I mean, some of the best magicians in the world come there and just hang out. And that includes Penn and Teller. So that's Penn Jillette that I'm in the picture with.
Oh, I thought it was Chris DiBona.
Yeah, most people do make that confusion there. There's been a lot of talk. There had been a lot of talk anyway. I think propagated by you guys and by our friends over the pond.
Honestly, Chris does not look like anything like Penn Jillette.
They don't look anything alike.
The only thing they have in common is they're both tall, big guys with dark, long hair.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Penn Jillette, Chris DiBona is not as tall as I am. Penn Jillette towers over me. The dude is just, if he had a battle axe in his hand and like a helmet on his head, he would be just even more like from your nightmares than he could possibly be any other way. But yeah, so there'd been all that talk about Chris DiBona looking like Penn Jillette. So I posted this blog post where I get a picture with Penn Jillette, and I posted it. So I met Chris DiBona. And it was all in good fun, and I asked Chris if he ever saw it when I saw Chris in Wolverhampton for Lug Radio Live, and he just sort of, yeah, I saw it, and moving on. Chris doesn't really have a whole lot of time for me, I guess, in my shenanigans.
He's probably a busy guy.
Yeah, I guess so. So anyway, that's the story behind that picture.
That killed the conversation.
I'm trying to hold up my end as much as I can, guys.
And I don't have the cricket sounds ready either.
Come on, Al. Make yourself useful.
Hold on.
Hold on, he says.
Sometime today.
Sorry.
It's not right, happening well, for us, Alan.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Hold on.
Are you guys trying to do something there?
He's trying to be clever. There you go. Right there. Cricket.
Yeah, I'll have to, like, get him put into the mixing board. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
I heard it.
Oh. Yes, you're trying to get the cricket sound in there. Hey, yeah. So since there might still be some of the listeners on through that long dead airspace there, I'll fill in with something real quick. I'd love to, anybody that wants to get in touch with me, you know, if you're hearing this, you find any of the things that I've mentioned interesting, particularly the things I mentioned about Bungie Connect, and you want to know more about it, maybe you want to see what this Ajax development platform looks like, drop me a line. I'm ted@bungielabs.com, and that's B-U-N-G-E-E. Don't confuse it with the similarly named company, IE Studios, Bungie Studios.
That is Ted@BungieLabs.
Ted at... Yeah.
He's going to say it himself, though.
Bungie, the one you're talking about, isn't that a video game company?
Yeah, yep. they make for some like platform out there. I'm not sure. I guess it's kind of popular. Sprouted up overnight or something. But yeah, they make a game called Hello or something like that. I'm not sure.
Hello?
Hello 3.
Oh, dub. Yeah, that's right. They did a Banjo-Kazooie too back in the day. That was an awesome game.
When I understand that there's a guy involved like with that whole platform that once wrote a game called Donkey or something, but that was many years ago, back in the 80s when code was short and cheap.
It was kind of a shame because Bungie used to put out some games, and they used to put them out for Nintendo too, and now they're all strictly locked into some other platform, some other console.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing what a lot of money flowing into your coffers does for your attention to one platform versus another.
True that. Hey, are
but
you...
Still, you know what? We have a console at my office, and it's just two doors down from me, and it's not that Xbox thing. It's these guys are addicted to Wii tennis.
There you go. The Wii is the greatest.
It kicks ass, man. It's just
Wii
great
is fun.
Game.
Do you have a Wii, Alan?
Yes, I do.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. If you guys haven't seen the Wii
made,
versus...
Made the wife stand in line to get me one.
If you guys haven't seen on YouTube the Wii versus Nintendo... Wii versus PlayStation. I'm sorry, because Wii is Nintendo. Wii versus PlayStation... spoof on the Mac PC videos. Get on it, because that's just awesome.
I'll have to check that out tomorrow at work.
They've got a couple women who I'm a Mac, or I'm a Mac, I'm a PC. They're doing the I'm a PlayStation 3 and I'm a Wii. And not only is the Wii girl hot, but they just really nail the exact differences between the two platforms quite well.
I saw the Mac guy in a movie. He was actually in a movie.
Yeah, they're both actors, Pat. You didn't know that?
You mean he's not really an Apple user?
No. He's not really
an
Apple either.
He's not actually a Macintosh. Can you believe that?
I don't believe that.
Hey,
yeah,
you know,
I saw him actually in a preview for a movie. It was like some action movie or something where he's like sitting in a car with like Bruce Willis or something.
Yeah, he was in some cheesy movie where it's like he can't get into any college, so he goes and he rents like some abandoned building and he starts his own college.
That's what I did.
I think it was called Accepted, I think.
Huh. Yeah, I've actually established my own university.
What's it called?
University of Pyrotechnics.
And how do you get a degree from there?
Just ask me for one. I'll gin something up for you. I'll make you some kind of, of document.
You blow something up. That's what you do.
Yeah, can you send me the document in an unencumbered format, like maybe an SVG or a... Can you do it in DIA for me?
Will you take some kind of ODF format?
I will take ODF, no problem.
Okay, then.
All right, excellent. I look forward to that. I need another degree.
ODF, did you guys see the story about Michael Meeks pushing to fork off open office?
Yes, I saw that today. It was on Alexa.
What'd you think?
What was his argument? What was the thrust of his argument?
His argument was that Sun is not making it easier for people to contribute code.
Wow. You know, Michael's said that for quite a long time, or not really said that, but more just sort of grumbled privately about that for quite a long time. He's found it always difficult for, to participate in that. And if you look at what his team, the open office team at Novell, does, Noel Power, several other guys, the stuff that those guys do is just outright amazing with, code base that really wasn't that strong to begin with. They've managed to put in huge features, huge interoperability features that are so important to Linux desktop. I'm not surprised that he would say that because he's grumbled about it for years, but they're really difficult to get to accept the code and things like that. They don't review in any kind of timely fashion, and it becomes very difficult. Few people know it, but most of the distributions out there that carry OpenOffice in them are using the derivative of Michael Meeks' version of it, the old Zimian version, which is now the Novell version. That's what gets included in so many different Linux desktop systems, including Ubuntu. That's why a lot of these features like, VBA macro integration and stuff like that becomes available in other distributions. They're not actually taking the Sun's primary version. And that's one to fact check me on, by the way, because that's what I've been told by Michael and other people, but I never went out and did the actual research. I just espouse it as though it were fact.
Ted.
Ted, do you own an iPhone?
Do I own an iPhone?
Yeah.
No.
Good.
Ted, what the hell? Why am I having such a hard time finding the RSS feed to your blog?
Is it your iPhone?
No, it's not my iPhone.
None of us have iPhones.
I can subscribe via Technorati. I can do blog lines. I can do feed line. Lounge, I could do add to my Google, and I could do my Yahoo. I just want an RSS feed. Why do you hide that from me?
What are you looking... What am I hiding from you?
Yes. Why are you hiding just an RSS feed from me? Why do you hate freedom?
What?
For your blog.
For what?
For your blog.
Just get the URL for my blog and put feed on the end of it, and you've got the RSS feed. It's WordPress, dude.
Yeah, but I'm lazy. I don't want that. I want the feed right in front of me.
I don't have a link for RSS on there?
I don't see one. I see, add this blog to my Technorati favorites, subscribe with blog lines, feed lounge, add to Google, my Yahoo.
All right, I'm going up to my machine.
Dude, all you gotta do is click on the feed icon up in the URL.
Yeah, it's got a feed icon in the URL. Aren't you on Firefox?
Click on the icon.
No, I'm on Internet Explorer.
There you go. That's your problem.
No, I'm not. But I don't subscribe to my feeds through Firefox.
But you got the URL.
All right, guys. That's it. I have to go look at my own blog. I really don't care for that thing, but I'm going to have to
go there. Dan is being difficult. Do not pay attention to him.
What do you mean I'm being difficult?
You're being a pain in the ass, man. It's our guest.
Page the man behind the curtain.
Hey, I want to read Ted's words. I wiped out all my feeds the other day.
I didn't have a problem reading his feed.
What do you use as a feed reader?
I'm using Sage in Firefox.
See, I don't use Firefox.
Another commie.
What do you use?
What do I use? I have my Thunderbird set up with a feed subscription, which dumps all my feed to an IMAP server, so I have it accessible from anywhere I connect to my mail service with.
What's the URL to your weblog, Ted?
It is reverendted.wordpress.com.
It is lemonparty.org.
And allow me to get that. I'm actually doing this live because of your complaints. Whose complaint is that? I can't recognize some of your voices.
That was Alan's complaint, the bastard.
Was Alan complaining that?
That was Alan was complaining.
No, it wasn't. It was Dan.
It was Dan.
Dan being a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
When isn't Dan complaining?
I'm not. I really enjoy Ted's words, and I just want the rest of the world to, too. All those
so
people.
Why aren't you freaking subscribed, huh?
I was subscribed, actually, and we'll see. Now, that's another story there that happened just the other day. I wiped out all my feeds, and I'm in the process of putting the ones that I really, really want back.
Are you getting used to the whole computers thing?
Nah, I was in the process of cleaning stuff up on my server, on my home directory. And like I said, I do all my feeds through an IMAP system server, and I deleted that
and
that folder.
And instead of making any backups like a normal person would do, you would think someone of Dan's skill level would make backups. No.
No, I back up what's important, like, you know, other people's stuff and service stuff. But when it comes to my own personal stuff, I very rarely back any of that up. So then I get cross when I realize that I did something stupid, like wipe out my feeds directory.
Well, what the hell are you, man? What are you, Thomas the Tank Engine? Freaking cross?
Yes.
Okay, if
Dan was feeling very cross today.
He was backing up his home directory. Chugga, 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 chugga.
Hey, Dan.
Yes.
If you refresh on the blog now, you'll find the feed. It's got a link there right under the subscription thing where you're looking for all the others.
Yeah, but see, now the problem is the feed doesn't fit properly in that little space. It extends past. So I'm just saying for your own purposes.
What you need, Ted, you need an icon that says, Dan's fucking feed.
Well,
your
I think
name's Dan, and you're
Those
a dumbass.
Right
the
now,
feed
can check
is.
The blog. It won't be there. It won't be there later. But if you are named Dan and you are a dumbass, the feed is http://reverendhead.wordpress.com/feed.
I like that. And you spell my name with two N's, so now I'm really that shows dedication to your craft.
It does. He must be a fan.
He is good.
I capitalize the D.
Doesn't matter.
Talk for anything?
No, that doesn't matter. Thank you very much. Because you didn't capitalize the start of the sentence either, and there's no punctuation whatsoever. But
that just means he's a geek, that's all.
But it's functional, and everything's spelled properly, and right on the money. Thank you very much. I am impressed.
Well, I aim to deliver, Dan.
That is great. And you know what?
I may not recognize the voice immediately from Alan, but I do recognize... I do recognize how to spell your name.
Excellent. Now, I don't know if you covered this and I was just zoning out, but I'm curious, at Bungie Labs, are you actually doing coding?
I am. In fact, I'm really pleased with myself. Can I toot my own horn
on
the air?
As long as you toot links afterwards.
All right. Here's the thing. When I went to Bungie, I was very nervous about it. I looked at the company, I saw their technology, my jaw hit the floor because I've always been, you know, free software I'm into and stuff. Technology has always been my biggest thing, though. I love cool tech, and that's the first thing that's on my mind. The free part of it is like icing on the cake when you can share with other people and stuff like that. I should make sure listeners know that when I talk about Bungie, the platform is not open at this point. We use a lot of Linux and things like that, but we are not open yet. I'm advocating that within the company, and it's right now at one of those points where there's a lot of a debate about not if, but when. So I think eventually we will get there, but it's not there yet. So,
well, make sure that they get a chance to talk to RMS about the whole freedom thing. I'm sure that will sway them, just like it did me.
I don't think Mr. Solomon's going to be the guy that's going to be the best advocate for us. But there's a point that I was going toward. You were asking if I'm writing code. And
right.
That was my big fear, because I knew if I took this job with them, you know, they recruited me from Novell, all the work I was doing there, and said, we want a guy who can do what he does. So I snowed them pretty well somehow through the blog and other things. But the thing that I was so worried about is, will I be able to learn to actually do development? Because we're not talking about, you know, this isn't just XML script hacking or anything. This is full object-oriented development here, where you're dealing with, you know, creating classes, writing functions with logic in them, creating forms and things, linking things up, wiring them together, and actually having to do real design and thought into application to make them happen. It's certainly an easy platform to do that because somebody like me can learn it, but it's still actually sophisticated stuff you can create, and sophisticated and I don't really get along most of the time. So I dove into it, and it's pretty much been since end of April, that I've been really slamming away at learning how to develop code and stuff like that. I really got into RESTful APIs on the Internet using the REST protocols out there, which is you should be able to just throw a URL at something. All your parameters should be able to be in your URL, and you should be able to get a response back, usually in XML, more often in JSON these days, but I should say increasingly more often in JSON these days, but XML or JSON comes back. And deconstructing that stuff is sometimes very difficult. Well, here's the rub of where I'm going. I actually sat down and solved a problem for my company where I sat down and figured out how to automate REST services a little bit, which we hadn't gotten all the way done with. We were talking about doing it. I actually sat down and wrote function logic to make it so that you can create objects out of XML responses, and this is actually being put into our platform. So for the first time in my life, I've actually submitted code to engineers, had them look upon it, and in this first time I ever did it, they smiled upon my code and said, this code is good. Change it like this and like this and like this, and then we'll put it in. I made the changes. It's going in.
Cool.
So
congratulations.
That's my tooting of my own horn. I'm actually smart enough to write code in my company's platform. It was a blast doing it. It was a lot of fun.
Jeez.
Holy crap.
Ouch, yeah.
That hurt. That wasn't me.
That was way loud.
Yeah. How come that's louder than everybody else?
That's a good question.
Sorry, Ted. As you were.
Did you say something?
I don't know.
You guys sound like you're like, you know, it feels like Saving Private Ryan, where one of the shells just went off next to me or something. It's, everything sounds like it's hollowed out.
Shh, everybody. Ringing in your ears there?
And the static
to
go with it?
Short answer to the question is yes, I'm writing code.
Well, that is great. Is that code going to be released to the community then?
Well, it's actually going to be into the platform. It's not really something that can be released in the community because it's pretty much to Bungie's platform, which is why I did the disclaimer up ahead that it's not an open platform at this point. It's not free.
Damn, we almost had it. So now, I'm looking over the Bungie stuff on their website and everything. And is the service more or less people would subscribe to the Bungie service and drag and drop modular components to build what application they would desire? Is that what this is going to be?
State the question again. I got lost.
So did I. The Bungie Connect, is this going to be a service that people subscribe to and build an application by dragging and dropping modular components?
Eventually that will be the case. Right now and in the near future, it won't be. Essentially what you've got right now is not really a thing that you subscribe to. You get a developer account on it, and the reason I said people should contact me is if they want a developer account, just try it out, get involved with us, interact with me a little bit about some of the stuff we're working on. That's one reason to contact me, is I'll get you an account right away and get you into the system. But the essence of it is you get an account, you end up directly in our builder, which is our IDE, our development environment, where you can create all the different like pieces of a program that you need to make your object model through developing different classes, putting the kind of fields you need in your classes, creating functions that cause, you know, transformation of data, different types of processing and things, gets all that kind of thing done. And then you can actually deploy your apps. One of the goals that we have with the platform is to make a thing that we're going to be calling the Share, and the Share will be a place where you can actually develop components of applications. We'll eventually have the name on those called Chords, so you'll be able to make Bungie Chords and then share those with other people. That would be how you could get to the drag and drop shareable components between people. That's a little ways off. We're probably looking at January, February before we'll have a first iteration of the sharing part of it. And it's around that time also that we're going to have to start, I think, spinning up conversations a lot more loudly about what we plan to do with our intellectual property, whether we're going to start opening it up or anything like that, because, of course, there's things like, I guess RMS has a document out there called the Java Trap, and we would be fitting that description quite well if we don't start showing some kind of plan for sharing the code, sharing the source, and things like that for our platform.
Okay. That answers my question there. Fantastic.
But your question really had two parts to it, I guess, in my answer. The answer that I throw out there is half that, yes, there will be the ability to do drag and drop of components and make up your own apps by mixing together other people's stuff. But the first half of it that I answered is right now the development is much more of a traditional create your model, create your view, and link them up together.
Okay. I get it. Awesome.
It's cool stuff. I don't remember. Which of you guys write code? Because there's a couple. I think there's like one or two of you guys that write code, isn't there?
Pat and I do on a regular basis. Link does.
I do Java mostly.
I'm doing PHP.
Cool, you guys ought to get involved. I invite you.
Okay, send me the information.
Okay, then.
Yeah,
I'll
thank
send you. Guys
you.
Some, I'll send you guys a couple invite keys, because right now we're in this early access phase. We're heading for open beta. So I'll send you guys a couple keys on that.
I'd be interested in checking it out. Sounds like...
We'll check it out.
Yeah, so we're about to do a really big release. In fact, it's probably rolling out in the next couple hours here, I'm hoping. We do upgrades. Because we're able to do this software as a service thing where people connect to us through the web, we're actually able to do feature updates on a monthly basis. So we're constantly bringing the platform up. We got a massive release happening. As soon as that hits, I'll get a couple emails over to you guys so you guys can see some of the brand spanking new shiny stuff.
That's going to be awesome. I look forward to it.
Yeah.
You know what? Wait a minute. Your wife, doesn't she work at Novell?
Yes, she does. She's now my ex-wife, though.
Oh.
So I know there's a lot of hot young women that listen to the Linux Link Tech Show, so ladies, I'm available.
Okay. I didn't know that.
That's where the
Sorry if I brought up a sore subject.
No, you didn't bring up a sore subject. You brought up actually a very pleasant one.
You know, speaking of women...
And there's the deathly quiet.
Speaking of...
Way to go, Dan.
Yeah, we're going to shut up. Speaking of... Yeah, this is another guest I'll piss off to no end, right? He'll go down the ranks of Shuttleworth and RMS.
Did you piss off Shuttleworth?
Apparently.
I mean, pissing off Stallman, that's easy enough. But pissing off Shuttleworth, that's, you know... In that case, you haven't pissed off like a guy who's he grooms himself. You pissed off somebody who's got good grooming and things, and also somebody who's got a lot of money.
Yes, and he's a you know, didn't mean to, but I think I did, and it was an accident. And from what I hear, he's never done another podcast after that.
Really?
Apparently.
What'd you do? I gotta hear this.
I said something stupid at the end, equating Ubuntu with Microsoft or something like that, in like a ha-ha fashion, and at the time he wasn't feeling good or he was like sick or whatever, and that ended the interview right there.
Well, in all honesty, he was not feeling well. He was like getting sick, and we had spoken to him for over an hour or close to an hour.
But it was
on
like
the phone with you guys, right?
Yeah,
he was on the phone.
It was
he's on the phone with you guys. I mean, he's got no excuse for getting sick. I've seen you guys in person.
It was a very abrupt ending. And I hope, you know, I sent him an apology afterwards because I didn't mean to offend him in any way. Because he's a great guy and what he does is phenomenal. And it was like a sudden and abrupt ending that it was just like somebody turned a light switch and that was it. And now I feel really bad, but...
There was just a little flash of awkward, and then it was done?
Kind of.
Well, I know I can hear in your voice that it was probably a little bit of an embarrassing issue, but still, I want to say kudos.
Oh, thanks. Now I forgot what I was just about. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Speaking of women, one of the things, you know, back to the Ohio Linux Fest a second this year, that there was an awful lot of women there compared to last year, which is a good thing.
This is one of the things that I think open source is long overdue to get more of, and there are women in open source, but the proportions of proportion of men to women in it, especially as public figures, has been disproportionate. That's great to hear. I've been noticing that there are getting to be more women in technology in general, but if you say they were there at Ohio Linux Fest, fantastic.
Yes.
Hopefully that trend continues.
Yes.
I hope I said all the right things there.
I think you did. Maybe not. Who knows? You never know with these things anymore.
You know, actually, it was interesting. I talked to a woman a while back, actually the first time I went to SoCal Linux Expo, who was, she was, I guess, a Linux user group person down there. I was just talking to her about it and stuff, and she got into the subject of women in open source a little bit, and I said, so are you like, involved in Linux Chicks? And she went on a tirade about Linux Chicks and how she thought it shouldn't exist, and There shouldn't be a need for that kind of thing, and it was one of those things where I ended up scratching my head and thinking, well, okay, how did I get my foot in my mouth, you know? Just by one question. So yeah, I know what you mean, but I don't know. Generally, I find that we men have a way of creating an inhospitable atmosphere. In a lot of different things where it feels like boys' clubs, and it has felt like that for open source for a long time. I mean, look at us right now, where you've got some dude on the phone who's talking to you ad nauseum about various things in open source, and we've got not a single female voice on the phone, right?
True that.
Sausage Party City.
Yeah. Sausage Party City, indeed. So guys, we're at 2 hours right now, huh?
Yeah, we're going to go another hour and a half or so.
Are you really? Wow. So this is probably intermission for me then, I think. I'm going to have to jump off.
Now, Bert, seriously, we're going to go probably another 25 minutes or so.
So you're going to go back to your closed source environment, so.
Hey, guys,
it's back.
You know, check it out. take a look at it. I'm looking for people to get involved in it. And but one of the things that's interesting right now is as we're in this early phase of building this developer community and stuff, one of the things I'm finding that's really been a lot of fun is a few friends of mine who had been people that I knew through the SUSE community and things. One guy who I met at Bellingham Linux Fest have become these guys who have just sort of picked it up and have been following along because they're interested in like seeing what the company's doing, seeing what I'm up to, seeing, you know, the growth of a startup company and seeing whether it can be successful or not. Got guys who are got immediately involved in it and stay involved in it and are able to like get like I guess a lot of personalized attention and things coming through this process because they jumped on in this early phase where it's hey, we're looking for people who want to get involved in the tech, who want to be on the edge of something, and you know, we think the company's going to succeed. But anybody looking at it, you know, it's a startup, and so there's a little bit of that. Well, is it going to happen? You know, a little bit of that kind of anticipation. It's been a lot of fun to have some of those kind of people glob on and just sort of work with us directly, and you know, have direct influence on the product.
It sounds exciting. And I definitely look forward to checking it out.
Startup environment is definitely a very nice place to be as well for as far as getting stuff done quickly and, you know, every day earning your paycheck. Very different from, like, say, larger companies, which I've worked in.
It sounds exciting. Yeah. Thank you for sharing with us today.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on, guys.
It's
been a long time.
Yeah, it's been quite a long time. I haven't seen you guys since, I think, OLS last year. So, you know, a year has gone by, and sorry to have not seen you out there this year. Harder to get to the shows these days. But certainly good to talk to you guys.
Oh, and thank you. And maybe next year we'll see you at OLF.
Yeah, and definitely, one thing I probably will be at, there's some rumors, I don't know if they're continuing, but there are rumors at Lug Radio Live this summer that there might be a event sponsored by a large Silicon Valley-based, shall we call it, search firm.
Yeah, it's Google. They already announced
Silicon
it.
Silicon Valley this spring, early spring, to host a Lug Radio in the U.S., and you guys ought to come down out there and TP the whole place, you know?
Yeah, you know what? What you could do is send us a ticket to get out there.
We'll be there. You know, because I actually do have a Delta hub here, and you know, all my friends just give me tickets.
That's what I thought. So if you can send us the tickets, and we'll fly out there, and you can get us room and board and everything, and we'll be there.
Well, I can definitely guarantee you guys can get board.
Yeah, thanks.
We can pitch a tent on the Google grounds.
Yeah, so anyway.
We'll camp out.
That rumor that Lug Radio is going to be out there, that'll be fun because, you know, it's interesting anytime you bring Limeys to the U.S. to watch what happens.
They're going to get beat up.
Yeah.
They're going to get burned in the hot sun.
That's it.
Incidentally, I think Jono still has the picture up in his, like, home office of his office at Open Advantage, his company that he was working at before he went to Canonical, where you guys had his boss Paul actually go in there and put all the different British soldiers on the ground and all the
shirt and everything,
all the patriots out there, the shirt, all that stuff. That was just a great picture.
Yeah.
I hope that bastard wears that too.
Well,
we went through a lot.
What?
I said I hope that bastard. Shirt too. We went through a lot of trouble.
Yeah, you know, he's a fairly disreputable bastard. So I mean, it's hard to know whether he's going to ever do anything that is actually, you know, shows any sign of integrity or anything. So.
Yeah. Hear that, Jono?
He doesn't listen to our show.
He'll never hear that. I asked him once. You said, "Do you ever listen to Open Audio?" And he said to me, "No. I really don't like other
podcasts." He's a bastard. But we love him anyhow.
Yeah, we do. Anyway, guys, I got to get out.
All right, thank you very much, Ted. You have a good one.
Thanks a lot.
Take care,
guys.
And best of luck in your new spot, man.
Thanks for coming
on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
And just because we don't call on you doesn't mean you can't, you know, give us some crap and let us know what's going on.
All right. I shall do that then. I'll consider that an invitation to be there next week. I'll see you then.
Happy
cool.
day.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Alan, did you pop off and pop back on again?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Hey, guys.
I think Al or Cortez.
How's it going?
Is this Jay-Z?
Yeah. What's up?
How are you doing?
Doing all right.
You calling the...
I was going to call, but, yeah, this guy was going on and on and on and on. And, yeah.
You calling the Rip Miguel a new one again?
No, actually, I want to talk about the Open Office Conference in Barcelona.
Oh, did we supposed
and
to have one like last
week?
How was
Barcelona?
It was warm and nice and pretty expensive also.
Yeah, Barcelona's a nice town.
Yeah. Just don't eat when girls take you because girls like expensive things. I learned that the hard way. Anyway.
What happened in Barcelona? What happened at the conference? Anything special?
It was awesome, basically. Just guys running up and down, talking about open office and development, very technical talks. The big thing, of course, was the OpenXML kicking in the ass to Microsoft, and everybody was, like, excited. And basically what we're trying to do right now, there's basically three big things that were going on at the conference. One was the OpenXML thing. The other one was the extension project, which was launched before, like, maybe a couple months ago. And also this whole drive of ODF. ODF was all over the place. We have people coming from different office suites like Handsoft, KDE, KOffice, and other vendors. IBM was there also. They make the release of Symfony, and they also actually enter into what Rob Weir called the ODF bootcamp, which basically was trying to get all these vendors together and trying to get ODF compatibility between all of them and trying to get, like, different complex documents to open and see if they actually pass an ACID test. And it was pretty cool. It was amazing seeing how many different implementations of open documents there are out there that most people don't know about it. They even was an office suite for the Symbian OS. So if you have a cell phone, you can read ODF pretty good, actually. So yeah, that was one thing. Then there was a lot of governments. Well, since we were in Spain, Extremadura and all these big open source implementations were around, basically. And we got some representatives of their government talking about the implementations and their experience. And also we got some governments from other countries going into that conference to get some brain share about how can they replicate the same structure on their country. One of them was the Vietnamese, and they just basically announced that they were going to deploy about 60,000 desktops in open source throughout the country. It was pretty amazing. You can put the crickets now.
Why do we need crickets? Why is there silence?
I don't know. Oh, you want to go on? Well, I don't know.
Well, what do you think about the proposal by Michael Meeks, the fork-off open office?
Yeah, there was, I don't know, there was a lot of underground things going on also at the conference. That was the happy things and what everybody saw, but underground there was a lot of discomfort within the community. Basically, first was the Computer World article saying that, well, basically they make a mess out of it They quote people from IBM, quote people from Sun and from the community and stuff like that, and they make a big story that was completely crap. At the same time, yes, there were troubles in the community because basically the whole code base is hosted on Sun side basically, and the process that they have worked for, remember OpenOffice is really a product from this company called Star Division, who was acquired by Sun. So the core engineers that have been working with these offices have remained throughout the years. And the problem is that, well, you build a close deployment with the same people. Yes, it is going to be open, but at the same time, the core is going to remain with these same engineers. So, yes, the process still needs to be learned, and I think that one of the good things that is going on right now is the extensions. Now, it's been said that easier than done because, well, we have a chicken and egg problem here. We have the problem of, well, developers want to add this, and to add this, they need a whole different framework. So, for example, they want to... I remember that at one point Michael Meeks was working on the C-sharp bridge for UNO. Well, are you going to implement the whole UNO framework, which is the mono framework, within OpenOffice? Because one of the policies is trying to make OpenOffice not have dependencies. So... OpenOffice is already a huge application that ships with a whole version of Python within it. Now, are we going to ship with a whole version of C-sharp within it? And I don't think that's a good... it will just blow up the application by 20%, 40%. Now, they always been kind of like a fork in the sense that they had their own version and they put things that are Linux specific because they have the SUSE project. So the whole goal is to make an open office distribution for SUSE or for Linux. The problem in Sun is that they are making a distribution that will run the same thing on Windows, Linux, and Solaris. And actually the problem most of the time is not really Windows or Linux, but Solaris, because Solaris is not as cutting edge as the other packages deployed for the other platforms. So that's one of the things that being a drag in why most of the innovation that is going on is not getting implemented within the code base.
I guess the concern is, you know, that Sun isn't allowing outside people to come in as much as some people would like.
Well, from day one, Michael Meeks have been working, and actually the whole Novell team has been working within the OpenOffice code base, and we also have builds, external builds, for localization prospects like the ones provided with... from this guy Pavel Janik out of Czechoslovakia, or actually Czech Republic, sorry. And basically we have community involved in the project, but at the same time the code base is so huge that we're not very sure if actually making it completely community oriented will have the same resources to maintain all their code. So that's one of the big concerns in the sense of, well, yes, at one point we want Sun to let it go, but at the same time, we don't think are enough developers from the community to make the actual office suite sustain on itself, I mean, just community supported. So you have to realize that that you have a lot of... let me go back because I was reading the chat and got distracted for a minute. OpenOffice is bigger than the Linux kernel. And if you go to the kernel mailing list, you see parts of the kernel being unsupported every other week. and at the same time, developers moving on and trying to implement new things on the kernel, and it becomes a nightmare, basically. And to inherit those kind of community things that, well, since they're not paid for it, there's not really that many people that want to maintain and stabilize or maintain that older code base, well, is the community ready to support all these million lines of code? We have to ask ourselves, well, I mean, at this point, I think this marriage is not the perfect marriage, but we're staying for the kids, kind of like mentality. So, yeah.
That answer
on the flip
question,
side, Sun is a company that have been basically double-faced many times in the community. I mean, from one side, one day they will love Linux, and the next day they will hate Linux. And the same thing with open source. They will say, well, today we are open source as in free software. Tomorrow we're going to be open source as in Eric Raymond definition of open source, or in Linkfire definition of open source, or I don't know. So they are still a company that have a lot of proprietary mindset, and like what's his name, Jeremy, the guy that was here, he was saying like, well, for a lot of Novell management, it was just a business deal.
That was Ted Hager.
Yeah, Hager. So yeah, that was basically the same things that might go in and out of the Sun. Now, once that said, remember, I have nothing to do with Sun, and I actually don't know that many people in Sun, so might be whatever. I mean, I'm just guessing as well as you guys. But yeah, that's basically what is going on, and I think it will be a learning process for everybody. Not just Novell's decision to fork OpenOffice, because, well, they also facing the same issues that IBM did a couple of years ago when they fork OpenOffice 1.x and create the workplace product that now became Symfony. Symfony is built on a code, on an older code base, and is really very far from what the current code base of OpenOffice 2.x branch is. So, if I don't know what are they planning to do, Novell, to maintain this code base. I don't know if they will actually be grabbing the modifications that will come up for OpenOffice 3.0, because that's another thing. I mean, we are at the end of the product cycle, and OpenOffice 3.0 is coming within maybe not a year, but I don't know. I really don't know about the date, but it will be around a year time from now. So, and one of the things that that were announced during the conference is that, well, we're actually going to get more Web 2.0-ish friendly. So it's becoming very exciting, and we're seeing all these deployments on the internet, like the Buzzword product that Apple just got. And there was another product similar to a spreadsheet application called Edit Spread or something. And it's pretty good, actually. I was just testing it today, and it's awesome. And basically what it's becoming is like, how good of an implementation can we get for open documents? That is becoming the top priority. We don't really care to an extent that there are many offices. Actually, if you remember my talk when it was a couple of months ago, there was a talk that I was sitting with you guys and saying, well, we actually need more office applications that support open documents, because open office is just one part, but I have no trouble having Firefox, Epiphany, and Conqueror on my same desktop, as long as they all support W3C standards. So at the same time, I don't really care if I have different options of having Abby Word, OpenOffice, and on the web have Google Documents, for example, if they all have my same document with no difference, basically.
All right. So the future of open office is pretty secure in your opinion, yes?
Yes, and now that actually, it was a trade if you look at it from one point of view, because, well, on one point you have Novell kind of going away from us, and at the same time IBM coming in the same table with us, and there was another company called Black 2000 out of China, and they are basically upstreaming a whole lot of code of modifications of the source tree that they did, because they were having their own distribution of Office, Red Flag Office 2000, is the way they call it, and they are going to give all that code back to the Open Office team for them to actually go through a stabilization process and hopefully upstream. And their version is pretty amazing. I mean, their interface is completely changed, and a lot of people like it. Personally, I like it a little bit, but not. I mean, I'm kind of not that forward thinking, because they kind of clone many of the ribbon kind of mentality, and personally, I hate ribbons. So that's in the eye of the beholder. Yeah, that's basically the things that we gained this year, and unfortunately, the things that we lost.
Cool.
Now, looking a little bit skeptically, I mean, on the other side, I found Novell becoming very odd company, in the sense that on one side, Novell is not really getting on the boat of ODF, being more pro OpenXML, and becoming this company that wants to be the most compatible Linux version for Microsoft environments, which also sounds a little bit like Sandro's kind of mentality, which I'm really a fan of. And, well, having that deployment in Novell being a very Microsoft Linux, I'm kind of agreeing that they are pretty much stepping away. I mean, you have a lot of things very pro-Microsoft going in, like OpenXML, you have Moonlight, and then you have this fork of OpenOffice and the whole VBA implementation. So they basically are adopting Microsoft technologies like crazy and reverse engineering, which, I mean, it is the same reason that a lot of the log radio people was saying. It's like, well, we can spend all that resources trying to follow the leader in this case, or we can just deploy really cool technology from within ourselves. So just basically making Python a better language, or making the desktop more web-oriented, Samba better, to talk better within Unix machines rather than Windows environments, and just spending and trying to be the coolest technology, not trying to decipher the latest technology from Microsoft.
Oh, well, that's an interesting...
That is just my thought. And at the same time, I want to talk about something completely different, since I'm already spending money calling you guys. I was talking with Riddlebox. No, hold up. Yeah, Riddlebox. Today I made my first donation in a while. I just sent €5 to a very small extension that I really liked. It was called Writer Tools, and it's up on the extension website. I probably put it on the IRC later, but it's pretty cool because you have your document open, and then you can send it to translate, to Google Translate, to, you can save it remotely by FTP directly from the OpenOffice interface, and you actually have like 10 tools within that extension, and it's really cool. I mean, I just tried. And I was so impressed that I instantly just went and put a PayPal and sent €5 to Dimitri, which is the developer of that extension. And I was like, Well, I mean, I just wonder how many people that use open source within this show actually contribute by giving money back to these projects. Because I don't know. I mean, like, and that's another thing, because I see also people that spend a lot of money in the real world buying gas, buying soda, buying lattes and Starbucks. And at the same time, they go to the internet and say, like, ooh, $5. I don't know. That's just, like, a lot of money. And I just wonder how many people feel the same way that I do, that people are extremely cheap online as opposed to in real life. What is your take, guys?
Well, I can tell you that we had two listeners that, well, three, really, that contributed to the tech show while we were at the Ohio Linux Fest, which surprised the hell out of me.
Oh, that's cool. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I try to contribute to different, either, you know, projects or, you know, an application.
Oh, nice.
Supported schedules, direct. From Miss TV, I subscribe to that.
I did as well.
Yes, we could always use to supporting more of our favorite
cool
projects a little more, definitely. That goes for all you.
Yes, don't be
yeah, that
bastard.
Sounds amazing. And I asked one of the I asked this question because one of the talks that I attend to was a guy that wanted to do the same thing that Firefox did for the newspaper, printing that ad. He actually went with OpenOffice and make a print ad on the Metro, and probably Pat, you know the Metro in New York. And he actually got a lot of donations from...
Oh, he had a Subway ad?
They would pull it up, yep.
For OpenOffice? That's cool.
Yeah. It was for the 2.0 release, and it was pretty awesome.
That's cool.
Because it was just one guy, the guy that... I mean, Firefox then probably had a whole team, and on OpenOffice, it was just this guy alone, and did the whole thing, top to bottom.
Yeah, it's always important to contribute and support as much as you can. That's always important. We could always use that.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, I gotta hang up because this is expensive. So I hope you guys have a enjoy your conference in Ohio, and hopefully, did you guys record it? Did video record it? Because that would be cool to have some video footage on YouTube or somewhere.
Aaron Newcomb has some interviews he's going to put up soon.
Alan has some video recordings, don't you, Alan?
Yeah, I'm working on trying to get rid of all the junk out of it, get like one decent one. Slowly but surely. There's that little one on YouTube to start with there.
Take care, JZA.
All right, thanks a lot, JZA. Have a good one. And unless you guys have anything else, I'll play our song out.
Cool, what are you going to play?
War Games by Dual Core off the 01 album.
Cool.
Alan, Pat, you guys have anything?
No, I'm good. Thanks for listening.
We got the Band Warp 11 coming on next week.
It was good to see all the people who came out to sit, you know, at the Ohio Linux Fest to see us.
Absolutely, man. It was awesome.
Yes, thank you. Were you going to say something there, Link?
No, I guess not.
Oh, come on, man. Spit it out.
Time to go. Keep it for next time. Keep everybody in suspense.
But don't forget, last time you did this crap on us, you came back 3 weeks later and said you forgot what it was. Where are the crickets? Are you still there?
I'm still here.
I am too.
Is Link still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, man. Well, I guess I'll play us out, and I'll talk to you all next week. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Good night.
Nighty night.
Good night.
These computers give us instant access to the state of the world, troop movement, Soviet missile tests, shifting weather patterns. It all flows into this room and then into what we call the Whopper computer. Whopper, what is that? The War Operation Plan Response. This is Mr. Richter. Paul, would you like to tell these gentlemen about the Whopper?
Well, the Whopper spends all its time thinking about World War III. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, it plays an endless series of war games.
War games. This is Y2K, man, challenging the law games. War games. ICBMs with the distance of all range. War games. Nuclear submarines, fighter jet warplanes. War games. Search warrant issue, kicking down warframes. Again from the start, when computers had tubes. I don't mean the internet's the real vacuums. With diodes and relays to shoot for the moon. Just one system, fill the whole room. Advance back then to write plenty tracks. On top of Colossus, Zack Zeniac. Back in the 50s, before they had help, my AI deceived even Turing himself. Had a conversation that made his brain numb. Where did you think the Turing test came from? NP complete? That's my problem. Natural language is trivial. Process all through the years to outthink humans. Frustrated Davis, stumped von Neumann. Updated circuitry, improved designs. Like most things in life, I got better with time. War games. This is Y2K, man, challenging the law game. War games. ICBMs with the distance of all range. War games. Nuclear submarines, fighter jet warplanes. War games. Search warrant issue, kicking down warframes. More and more systems when I'm given the time. Pushing my way over ARPANET lines. Came out the military, moving commercial. Pursuing consumers, computers now personal. They put me in movies, created a buzz. But still they don't see what I'm capable of. Hackers attack, did you miss the news? Exaggerate facts till the mist comes true. Let's play a game, dial up NORAD. Global, thermal, nuclear war pack. Rabbits and blue shots match my angle. With the Da Vinci virus to capsize tankers. Large fortunes made in small amounts. Take a fraction of a penny out of everyone's account. Fire and ashes, smoke I can cover with the upload of virus and infect the mothership. War games. This is Y2K, man, challenging the law game. War games. ICBMs with the distance of all range. War games. Nuclear submarines, fighter jet warplanes. War games. Search warrant issue, kicking down warframes. Global employment for clients with patience. A new application, human surveillance. Echelon intercept, analyze evidence. Or discard irrelevance of signal intelligence. Ooh. Looking for a flash of light in the black and night. Passing by to satisfy when I'm tracking by a satellite. Out of commission, pushed to its afterlife. I'm the reason carnivore lost its whole appetite. Feel so unbreakable, crush those bones. War thou, more file, touch tone phones. Frequency bounded for how the mic sounded. Improved heuristics for HAL 9000. Hackers could break in and exploit the site. So blast off the nukes out of underground silos. Update the bus beats fast as the clock goes. Also, brute force the launch codes. War games. This is Y2K, man, challenging the law game. War games. ICBMs with the distance of all range. War games. Nuclear submarines, fighter jet warplanes. War games. Search warrant issue, kicking down warframes. War games.
There's a war going on outside, no man escape from.
War games.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up. It's over.